set.
You're listening to
The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time. The Antioch Podcast.
A podcast ministry of Madison Church.
Oh, I got Jesus, yeah.
Hello, welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. For those of you new to the podcast, our multi-ethnic team is comprised of Dr. Michelle Lloyd Page, Pastor Reggie Smith, PhD, Susie Dixon, MDiv, Libby Heisinger, MDiv, and myself. All of us are active in anti-racism initiatives at various Christian institutions in and around the city of Grand Rapids, Michigan. We gather at the end of each week to catch up on one another's lives and have a good talk about biblical anti-racism. Last week, episode 89, we began this conversation talking about our emotions following the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent protests that followed. After talking with each other about how we were processing these events, we pick up the conversation this episode by talking about a local, peaceful Black Lives Matter march that happened in the wealthy, 95% white neighborhood of East Grand Rapids. Let's go now and listen to this conversation.
Believe me, I am not watching a lot of news. It's minimal, but you know, I click it on. It's okay. Is there anything else I need to know? And yesterday, again, we are situated in West Michigan in the Grand Rapids area primarily. And they were showing this, I think they said that this white woman who was in her 70s in East Grand Rapids, there was a peaceful protest walking through East Grand Rapids, and this 70-some-year-old white woman came out with a bat into the people who were walking peacefully through East Grand Rapids, right? And they were showing, because they were giving credit to some of the protesters to shield her, right? Someone came and grabbed, you know, was trying to grab the bat from her, and someone was, you know, holding her so other people who probably was about to go off, but also for her protection and everything. And then they questioned her afterwards, like, why were you doing that? Well, it has nothing to do with racism or anything like that. I was just trying to protect my property. No one was doing anything destructive.
Yeah.
They were walking peacefully. Cause you know, if there was some unpeace disturbances going on, the news would have picked up they were disturbing things. Mm-hmm. But even the news said they were walking peacefully and were even inviting people to come and walk with them. They were just walking peacefully through with their signs. And this woman said, I didn't want them to destroy my property. And then someone who was, I don't know, son or whatever male figure in her life came out and says, yeah, you all are on private property. You have to get moving. They were walking in the middle of the street. Middle of the street is not private property. You coming out wielding a bat, that's assault. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't charged with assault.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, I'm just not surprised. No. Well, I'm not that she wasn't charged.
Yeah, I could see not wanting your property damaged, right? If you were a store owner in downtown Grand Rapids, you're standing in front of your store, it's like, come on, I got you if you come this way, right? You're not going to, I know you're mad, I'm mad too, but you're not going to destroy my livelihood. I could understand. But no one was, there was no rioting going on. They were walking silently in a silent protest through the streets. She looked like she was 75, right? It wasn't like, you know, the Jack LaLanne physically fit. Oh my gosh, you're 75? Can't believe it. You look like you're 50 or 40, right? No, you look like you're a little old lady. What possesses you for someone who is that kind of old to say, no, I'm going to come out here with a bat and not think anything is going to happen to you?
A few things. Number one,
she thinks she's the center of the story. So she thinks she's the center of the story. She thinks she's the protagonist and that she has something people want and that people are going to break in and loot her home because she has an inflated sense of self because she's a white lady. Two, she's a white lady and she knows that it, and she's also old, which is in a class of people that we very much want to protect, is old white ladies. So she knows nothing's gonna happen to her. Nothing's gonna happen to her. Nothing happened to her. She didn't get hurt.
Wow.
Because the powers of white women's frailty is almost indomitable.
So she pulled an Amy Cooper.
Yes, and Amy Cooper, she did not get physically hurt and she didn't get arrested. If I went out in the street with a bat saying I'm protecting my property, I would be all over the newspaper.
I am not surprised by that because, and this is just me speculating, I think that she has had a steady diet of Fox News. Fox News is notorious for outrage. The average age of the people who watch Fox is over 65. The biggest demographic that watches Fox is predominantly white. And the biggest group that watches it, and they are fearful of other people, and all they need it's just someone who is telling them and prompting them, Antifa is coming to West Michigan and you need to protect yourself. Do whatever you need in order that there is not murder and mayhem that will come to your place.
For how many years has she been listening to people say they're coming for us? Meaning black people, brown people, any sort of person of color who's coming into your community, they're coming for your jobs, they're coming for your money, they're coming for your house. She's been told
they want to move into your neighborhood.
So and lower the property value.
She's been told that for years. Now she's told there's a whole bunch of opportunists who have come to your city with bricks and with bats to smash windows just to loot stores. She's not been told any version of the narrative of centuries of rage and grief and despair is manifesting in people in spray painting buildings. That's not the narrative she knows at all. She knows they're coming for me and for my stuff.
And what if she would have had a gun?
Oh.
As opposed to a bat in the house, right? I'm assuming the reason she wasn't out there with a shotgun is because she didn't have a shotgun.
Yeah.
It could have been a very different picture.
I like what you said, the phrase you said, Reggie, a steady diet of Fox News. Steady diet. And so that's where dismantling needs to begin. Like, we need to consider where our steady diets are coming from, you know, and help them to start saying, okay, maybe I need to add something else here. I don't know. Anyway, that's what I think we need to be dismantling. Some of what we need to be dismantling.
That's been a struggle area for me this week in particular, not just online, but also in person, is kind of knowing what is a wise way to engage with people who believe that this is a difference of political opinion and that somehow makes it like sacred and untouchable. That it's like, well, we just disagree and so you can't talk to me about this.
Right.
That sounds like some of the messages I've been getting on Facebook.
Well, the thing is, like, I think that's a, tell me if this is off, okay, because I don't know if it is or not, but to me, I feel like it's one of those unspoken rules of whiteness is that, like, we don't talk about things that cause people to fight. Or if you do, it's going with whatever the majority opinion is. So in this area, being heavily Republican, especially among white people, there's a little leeway to be a little bit Republican rude, but you can't push anything that would be, you know, seen as like progressive or Democratic and get the same amount of hedge. I know we talk all the time on here that like the kingdom of God is bigger than one kind of person. And I really wrestle with the fact that like, I have a hard time the last couple of days really feeling love towards Republicans who really want to praise the president for lifting up a Bible in front of a church or
don't
saying
get me like started.
I was just going to say the same thing, Susie. Don't get me started. Don't trivialize my faith in that way. Don't trivialize my faith.
Well, that's okay. So I've heard people say, like, don't drag Jesus into your mess.
Why didn't he just show up in the churches that he so desperately wants to have open? Why don't he show up there on a Sunday morning with the mask on?
Well, my strategy so far has been a failed mix of engage and offend, or I know I'm not my best self right now. I am super stressed and short-tempered, and I will love you better if I get a week or two to cool off.
Right.
And I'm not sure if there's another way, but I would sure love some pro tips right now on like, how do you, when you're emotionally frayed, how do you go and be with people who you have some philosophical disagreement at a really fundamental level?
I haven't figured it out yet. Okay, so I told my boss that if I was not on administrative leave right now, I would just say, I'm gone. I will see you in July. I don't care what you do with my paycheck, how you count it. You want to use vacation time. I don't care. I'm not going to be here. So I'm glad that it was an already planned time of administrative leave, because this one, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I really would not have been able to do it.
So I have two things that I learned, and I think I'm not sure exactly how I learned it. I don't know if it was growing up in New York and then being in the military, but I've been insulted a lot, you know, because New Yorkers, they like to name call and label. And at first, like the first time you hear something, like some kind of insult that you've never heard before, you know, it stings. Mm-hmm. But the more and more you hear different insults and names, you get to the point where you don't take it personally. Like what my body enters into is like poosh, this defense wall, and then I have to be really careful because something's going to come out of my mouth. So I have to watch what's going to come out of my mouth, because it's going to respond to that. So that's the first thing. I don't take things personally. And then the second thing, and I know this came from military training, they wear you out. You are tired. Most of the time when you're working, you're tired because, you know, you're on 24-hour shifts, and then you go to sleep for 6 hours, and then you got to do another like serious. So you are constantly going. And many times you are dealing with people who are not nice. And they're probably, every sentence probably has some kind of negative thing about you or your work or the situation. And there is no time to cry. There is no time to be sad. And so I have had to compartmentalize and say, all right, well, I have to find what I need to know in this so that I can do whatever piece of work I need to do. And I just need to keep going. And so there are times when I was in situations where somebody would say something and it would sting, and I could feel like myself, like really like sad and then pissed, angry. And then I realized, you know what? I've got to move all that to the side because there's no room for that right here. And I just need to keep going. And, you know, I don't know if that has desensitized me sometimes. And maybe, you know, maybe some people might call that a coldness, because I've had to learn how to get in touch with my emotions again. But I automatically go to those two places first, and then maybe I'll let myself feel later.
Something I try to practice, and this works better for written feedback than in-person feedback. Every single email I get, every single Facebook comment, I make sure to read in the gentlest voice I can muster. When I'm reading people's Facebook comments, I don't read them yelled. I read them in a gentle voice, as if they are asking me a sincere, heartfelt question. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not doing that, when I'm making them sound really ugly and mean and attacking me, then I have to be like, Libby, you're not allowed on Facebook for an hour. Until you're able to like read each comment, even though that you, I know they didn't mean it that way. Mm-hmm. And it might make me come across as like maybe cold, possibly condescending, which is something I have to watch out for, because that's a like, when I'm mad, I come out condescending. That's something I have to be aware of. But to try every single time I read a comment to read it as if this person spoke it lovingly. Mm. And it doesn't always work, but it at least gives me a cue for when my heart's not in the right place and I need to back off.
Going back to what Eric said originally is that we're all in different universes.
Yeah.
And those universes they're parallel, they don't meet. And, you know, I think about that with, you know, my wife's family, and you know, I'm standing there, and it was something a few years ago where I'm standing at a Thanksgiving something, and I think Barack Obama had just been elected president in 2009, and I'm listening to people, and they're saying, "Well, you know, he's going to bring Sharia law," and you got to remember, I'm the only person of color at this event. And I'm thinking to myself, I really want to say something really bad, and I really want to chuck them right now. Lord, I'm asking for permission to do it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. everything, and yet Jesus is saying, this is not the time. Mm-hmm. This is not the time.
Mm-hmm. And so what steady diet did that guy get that from?
Well, they are lifelong Midwestern Republicans. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was once they found out that I was a Democrat, they were very much against me marrying Sharon. This is highlighting two the parallel universes. And what makes conversation so difficult is that opinion now becomes truth. And you can't challenge that opinion because it's the emotional justification that really matters. It's mm-hmm. not about that it's actually true. And so what our liar in chief has made just okay in our terms is that it is okay to lie. It is okay to give your opinion because truth is not really what we're after. Mm-hmm. And now we're kind of living in this post-truth, of fact, and in that kind of universe, you can't do anything to change that person's mind because it is all based on how they emotionally feel about whatever subject that is, and no amount of truth, unless there's some kind of outside experience that dethrones that opinion or that experience.
Eric, you had asked what are some of the tips, and I said, okay, in this moment I just have to be out. But in other times, what I advise other people to do is I think about, what do I want as a result? Mm. In this exchange that is about to happen, whether it is an email or it's face to face, I ask the question, what do I want the result to be? Mm-hmm. And then to guide my actions. And then I have to ask myself, because ultimately, what do I want to preserve this relationship? Then I have to be in a posture that allows for questions, that gently does some education so that I'm preserving the relationship. Do I want to be heard? Do I want to be right? Do I want to prove that the person I'm talking to is an idiot? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me pull out the big guns. Let me shout. But in the process, I know I'm probably going to do damage to the relationship. Do I want to educate? And do I want to educate in a way that is more corrective? Or do I want to educate so that I can embarrass you? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, like Libby could do with me with scripture. I could probably do with topics about race and other things, right? Mm-hmm. I can embarrass you. So yeah. I have to think about, what is the end result that I want? And if what keeps coming to my head, which is why I would need the break right now, what comes to my head, if what I want is just to show you how angry I am, how hurt I am, and don't care about the outcome, mm-hmm. then I need to keep my mouth shut, or I need to give myself a rest. I need to take an hour. Mm-hmm. So believe me, I've gotten emails and I would just say, I can't answer it right now. Because I know what I want to say, or I write it and do not press send. I immediately delete it because, you know, those first or second time, you know, drafts is like, yep, do you feel better? Nope, but I said what I wanted to say. Okay, back. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to preserve the relationship, if this person, you know, why would a reasonable, well-thinking, good-intentioned person say this, right? So as Libby was saying, try to hear this in a gentle voice. Okay, if this person was not mean and cruel, if this person was not trying to start something, if this person genuinely didn't understand the way their words were having an impact on me, why might they say something like this? Let me give the best possible spin. Now let me respond in a way to that, but it all starts with, what do you want to do in that encounter? For me, when I get to the place where what I want to do in that encounter is to destroy them, or in this encounter, I just want to give you a piece of my mind, then maybe I don't need to have that encounter at that moment. And I need to step away, do whatever it is I need to do to get in the right space so that I can enter in. And then the other one is, are they worthy to have a conversation? Because you don't have to have a conversation with everybody.
Right.
Everybody is not worthy of my story. Amen. Everybody is not worthy of me. Mm-hmm. I don't owe anybody anything to explain to get what you demand. What? I don't think so. One, I'm too old. So no, you are not going to demand anything of me.
Yeah. That was so good, Michelle, because that is what I've had to move into. And I'm not going to say like had, like somebody said, you have to do this. It was actually a serious calling from God and saying, those are my people and I love them. So you need to love them too. And you speak to them the way you would want to be spoken to. And that's what guides me. It's a love and a hope for something that I can't even I can't even, I don't even have words for it, you know, because when we say we want the light to turn on, we want them to see truth. I want so much more for them. I want them to have, and not just with my words, just wherever they are in their part of the world and whatever they're thinking, there is this awakening to the pain that's happening in this world and then a desire to understand it and maybe stop causing it.
I also try to, as a pretty emotional person, I can feel like I have to go like all in and I have to feel every emotion at 100% capacity, but to remember instead, like, I can get more done if I live a long time. And I can get more done if I dedicate my whole life to doing a little bit of work all the time, yeah, than if I give everything I got for 2 years and then crash. Mm. And to remember, like, no, Libby, like, remember you're going to live a long time and you're going to do this for a long time, mm, and you're going to pace yourself. And that helps me remove the urgency from every single interaction. But also to remember that God is not asking me to change this person. God will change this person. God is asking me to be faithful and to plant seeds. And if my goal for this conversation is small, my goal for this conversation is not that this person will have a come to Jesus moment and experience radical transformation in one moment. My goal is I will give them one conversation in which they were treated with dignity and respect by somebody who disagreed with them. And that one conversation might plant a seed for them to say 3 years from now, you know, maybe what she said wasn't as crazy as I thought at the moment. If my goals are small and my reliance on God is big, then I can stay in it longer.
Yeah, for me, I think that's absolutely right. I think in terms of my role is to be a really good listener and to take in those stories and to have opportunities in which those stories will be recalled for a particular time, and doing reflection on that is very, very, yeah, I had a conversation with, oh yeah, I remember that. And then the other one is, so it's just being a good listener and also knowing I have to take care of me. I mean, this past week, you know, I got bombarded by all kinds of requests, yeah, to come and X, Y, and Z, help us do this, advise this, help us write this, and to say, no.
Yeah.
No, you don't have a right to all of me, and to be okay with that.
You know, and I think sometimes people don't understand that, Reggie, that, you know, in that moment where they have this urgent, I want to do something, and then they try to pull us in to help draft a response or to help speak into something, don't take into consideration that we might be processing and grieving and trying to take care of ourselves in the moment, right? It's like they forget we're human. It's like in that moment, oh, this is a resource that I could use. And it would be great to have a black voice, to have a white voice, to have whatever kind of voice. It would be great to have this kind of voice to respond to it. Okay, who do I know that's like that? Oh, I know, I'll ask them. And then demand an instant response, an instant response. And if you don't respond, you know, it was on the news 5 minutes ago, so you need to have a statement now, because it's 5 minutes past. And if you don't, then my gosh, you've been bought by the system. My gosh, you must be a racist. My gosh, you have no idea what you are asking. That's, that adds to the weightiness, because I got to deal with my emotions from seeing all this crap happen. And now I got to deal with the emotion of feeling like, okay, you all are now attacking me because I'm not responding on your timetable. Mm-hmm. How dare you? You don't know how many times I wanted to respond in that way to people. How dare you? How dare you put this on me? You want to drag me in? Yes, I have something to say, but I can't say it right now. Because if I said it right now, all I would do, you know, those little symbols that are the uppercase for the numbers, that's all it would be. All it would be. All it would be. And I'm not that person, right? I'm not that person, yeah. But that's all I got. Or it would be something, you want me to say something in this moment that if I had more reserves,
right,
I would say it differently so that it could be a help. Right now, all you why don't you speak out of your own pain instead of wanting me to say something because you're in pain? What about I'm in pain? Can you give me room?
You're right on. And, you know, I feel like Bagger Vance, that movie that was had Will Smith in it. It follows a line of movies like that where you're the magical Negro.
Yeah.
You're the magical Negro who comes in and who magically comes in and helps the little white people become better about themselves. They become more aware about the wider world. And then we just fade away, like out of nowhere. And those have been many of those kinds of movies that have been around for years.
Yeah.
But it depicts Black people as not human.
Yeah.
It's not with real feelings, real heartaches, real life. And as I'm thinking more about even the whole word of reconciliation, I am now retiring that word from my vocabulary. Because it's a false word. And people attach on to that word. Yes, it's a biblical word, but that assumes that in our own relationship between white and Black, oh, we started off just swell. That we were just good. And then we fell out, and now we got to get back together again. Last time I looked, 2016-19, it wasn't exactly a good year for us. And to expect that it was all good from the beginning, and then you're gonna come to me and ask for reconciliation? Oh, hell no. And keep that. No.
Yeah.
It is more I am more in line with Mark Charles. We gotta go with conciliation. Because we ain't never been good. We ain't never had a good relationship. We ain't never been on good speaking terms. You have done things to my people. And now George Floyd is now magnifying that we wasn't good from day one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we need to have a new baseline about how we enter it and have a real conversation. Mm-hmm. It's about conciliation, not about reconciliation.
And don't spiritualize it. Don't say, but the Bible talks about reconciliation and we're all supposed to be reconciled to God and you know, I know there's a great day of reconciliation, but that's not what I'm talking
that
about.
That ain't what right. I'm talking
right.
about.
Right. That's not right. what I'm talking about.
So what does conciliation look like?
What conciliation means, part of it, what it means is acknowledging that we weren't together in the first place.
Right.
It wasn't good from day one.
It means, so in a way, that's what the whole podcast series has been about.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This is not your kumbaya podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That, oh, diversity is wonderful. You're Black, you're brown, I'm white, you're red, we're yellow. So we're all God's family together. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah. Not Sesame Street.
Well, and then Eric will write this wonderful, you know, praise song for us, and we'll, you know, we'll open with that song, and we'll close with that song, and Libby will give this nice, wonderful prayer at the end. That's not what this podcast is about.
Right. This podcast was brought to you by the Black Panther. Lives Matter.
So,
Okay, so, and so, there,
so conciliation starts with that hard work of really understanding what's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And why.
Yes, yes, hello. Yeah. And so there, I think that there are many churches, many people that use the word reconciliation, right? And so just having us, you know, talk about it right now might not be enough for them to really understand, so that they change the wording in, let's say, the person that they hired and they are a racial reconciliation person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that word is misused. So what can we do to help people see the difference?
Well, one of the things is we could have them read The Color of Compromise.
And listen to the podcast.
That's one thing. They can read The Color of Compromise.
Uh-huh.
That should make it fairly clear.
Yeah. 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 We're actually doing some ministry restructurings. And I have some teams reading the book, and we're breaking it down over the summer, because I do not want to restructure a ministry based on the traditions of the church. I want there to be an understanding of how we have marginalized and maybe even hurt the church with decisions that we've made. And what does it look like to come to take some time to just kind of evaluate and really linger within the things that we have done, and what can we do to make it better?
So a little tip for white folks right now. If you've got a question about what can I do? What books can I read? What can I learn? Maybe right now don't email the first black person you think of. Google it. Google it.
This message brought to you by Helpful Tips for What?
And stretch out of your steady diet.
The more you know.
Yeah.
Should we leave it there?
It. Yeah.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast. Worship well together.